This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com. Today I am interviewing Will Conklin, and he is one of the owners of X-Broom, a broom sweeper that was started in 2009, that they began operation, and as he said earlier, banging stuff together and have worked since then to get it right, and my understanding is that they've done a real good job with that. So Will, welcome to the podcast to talk about the X-Broom, and I'm looking forward to what I learn about it myself.
I greatly appreciate you having me. I appreciate you reaching out to us and giving us the opportunity, I guess, to provide some information to yourself and potential customers and people out there that are interested in our product. I greatly appreciate that.
Well, what got you into this industry in the first place, or got the idea, the germ of the idea that a broom sweeper was needed in the marketplace, that, you know, there was a niche in the market that wasn't yet being fulfilled? How did that process work?
Okay. Well, really the easiest or best way to put it is we started as a contracting company. When it was founded, it actually founded under a company by the name of Nesbitt Contracting, based out of Tempe, Arizona. The founder's name was John Nesbitt, one of the owners of Nesbitt Contracting, is when this whole idea or the sprout of it kind of emerged and started to grow into something more than, you know, just the thought of owning their own brooms. Now, you know, he figured that he could build something better than what was out there, which, you know, at this point I tend to believe in that.
Well, you know, my start in this industry was with the Schwartz family, and that's exactly what Bob Schwartz did. They'd certainly become a very successful operation. You know, he was out there contracting and didn't like the machines he had to work with, and so he said, I could build something better, and it sounds like that's what you guys have done, too.
Yeah, I feel, you know, that's kind of a commonality when you start to talk to people in the industry and you talk to people that are in manufacturing and what have it. You know, it goes back to that saying almost that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So if you're running equipment on a daily basis, which I've got, you know, several years, many years of running equipment, you tend to start to almost, if you've got a mind that's in, you know, kind of fashioned that way, you start to almost re-engineer or add to or subtract from, you know, any piece of equipment and make it your own. And, you know, if you have the means to be able to produce something or manufacture something in that right as well, you just, I guess, roll with it and kind of do what we did or what it sounds like, you know, Schwartz did, or, you know, I'm sure Elgin and everybody else at some point in time, they, you know, they've got their own spin on things, and everybody produces a wonderful product, in my opinion, you know, in that regard. Everybody does something really well in their own regard.
Well, what did you see in you guys when this was being founded? What kind of features did you want to see that you really weren't finding in the current marketplace?
Well, with the street sweepers that we were running, at that time I believe that we had, I don't know if I can pinpoint a manufacturer's name specifically, but we had a couple of different brands of street sweepers at that point in time that we had thought that we could, or known that we could produce something better. We wanted simplicity, but at that time, the brands that we were using weren't that simple. They weren't that easy to work on. It wasn't that easy to attain parts or service. At that time, I don't know if we really considered building a brand or a serious, you know, market for necessarily our sweeper. It was something that we had produced for ourselves to use at that, you know, in the beginning. So I don't know if we were thinking along the lines of, you know, trying to get into this market and really try to conquer a market, or more along the lines of what would just be easier for us. But to answer your question, the simplicity is probably the number one thing that we were going for. You know, we wanted something that was going to be simple to operate, simple to work on, simple to maintain. That was probably the main aspect of it, was simplicity behind the design and operation of the sweeper.
Yeah, I think that's certainly an area where, you know, I hear a lot of complaints about different brands of sweepers where, you know, you've got a $15, $20 an hour guy and a $200,000 piece of equipment. And, you know, that's people that don't know anything about sweepers will ask me, what do sweepers do? And cavalierly, oftentimes, I'll say, they break. That's what they do. It's really a tough place to be out there and be a street sweeper. What are some examples of, you know, simplicity that your machines have that make them easy to operate or easy to maintain?
Well, one of the main aspects, we'll just start in the cab, for instance, our operating system, the simplicity behind that. So it's a touchscreen operating system, but it's a single-touch start-stop joystick operation. So, for instance, you know, just to run you through the sequence of starting the operation of the truck, if you were to jump in the truck and start it up and, you know, and get it ready to roll, you hold the PLC button on for 3 seconds, and it fires it up and boots the PLC, and then from there, it's really only two buttons that you would have to touch, one of which is on the touchscreen, and it's the PTO, so you would push the PTO button on, and then from there, you just push the joystick down, and the down sequence on the joystick starts all of the functions. So when you push it down, it lowers the elevator bottom down, starts the elevator turning, drops the main broom, starts the main broom turning. And then if both the curb brooms are selected to be on, which is also done from the joystick, but saved as well, it would drop both of those and start those turning as well. So
if a guy can't get that and he's going to be an operator for you, probably you don't want him.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, maybe in so many words, I guess, yeah, you could say that. You probably wouldn't want them working for you if you can't understand that.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
it makes it very simple to operate.
It sounds like it really does. And then that's ready to go. Can you tilt the brooms or anything like that you need when you need that, or are they preset?
Yep. So, hydraulic tilt is one of the functions or one of the features that we have on both curb brooms. So, and the tilt buttons and switches, tilt switches rather, are accessible right there. They're right on the PLC itself, very accessible to an operator from either side of the cab. We also actually do another little feature where it's a door-mounted joystick and tilt switches, where it mounts it up on the top of the door panel. So when a guy is on the right-hand side, when a guy is running from the curb side in the truck or operating from the curb side, right where your arm sits on the door panel, right where your hand would sit, is a little joystick and two little tilt switches. So, you know, you never have to kind of reach down towards the PLC. It's just right there kind of in your line of sight. So, you know, we really try to focus on keeping, you know, an operator's eyes on the road. And that's kind of learned through years of being in the contracting business and having several different operators operate a piece of equipment. And, you know, the more their eyes are on the road, the less likely they are to hit any objects or vehicles or anything else for that matter. So,
boy, that is very innovative feature.
Yeah.
And to be able to have your operator keep their eyes on the road, I mean, that's huge right there. But I know that can be a kind of a difference maker when you're moving from, because sometimes you sweep on the left side, sometimes you sweep on the right side.
Yeah.
And to have thought that out, I think that's very positive.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. A lot of the aspects of our broom actually come from customers or people that run the broom every day. So it might not necessarily be the owner of the broom, but it could be, you know, just an operator. My number is posted up on all of our social media accounts and on our website, my direct cell phone number. So what I'm getting at there is, you know, a lot of times if an operator is operating our broom, they're able to text me or call me and share ideas with me, and I actually encourage that quite a bit. In my opinion, that's what's built this business to where it's at now. I mean, you have to give your customers and your operators that are operating your product, you know, the utmost support, and you've got to encourage them to call you with ideas, because that's what really helps you to build the brand. It helps you to take it to the next level, is due to other people's help and input. That door joystick is actually from a customer of ours, one of our first customers, actually, in fact, in California. So he had kind of come up with the idea and brought it to us and said, hey, it would be nice, or it would be cool if you guys could come up with an idea or come up with a way to do this, you know, and mount this joystick here so that I can see it, you know, in my peripheral and run it up here. And I think that's what we do best, is take people's input and people's ideas and implement them into our product.
Well, no matter how well you design something or it looks on the drawing board and that sort of thing, you're never going to get the number of hours internally that you're going to get from your contractor base out there running the machine. So that's I can really see where that is something that could. And you know, so many big companies, too, they only want to do it from internal. You know, if their engineers don't come up with it, then it can't be a very good idea. And I've seen that over and over again. So I definitely applaud you for staying open to different kinds of changes and ideas and so forth that your customers have.
Well, thank you very much, yeah.
Let's talk about your transport system. It's a broom sweeper, so, you know, you've got a... How does it transport the debris from your main broom to the hopper?
Up into the hopper, yes. What we've got is we've got a 60-inch wide, 14 flight. What it is, you know, it's a rubber squeegee-style, drag-flat-style elevator system. So what we're able to do by incorporating a couple of extra flights into that is, you know, disperse that load because we are, you know, we consider it and actually use kind of the branding as a high-production street sweeper. You know, we originally designed this to run behind an asphalt mill to go back to the, you know, earlier in the conversation that we had talked about where we came from and why we did this. You know, as a contracting company, you know, we didn't just do dirt work or concrete. It was really, you know, we were really well-rounded. But what we did a lot of is we kind of built the asphalt milling industry in Arizona. We were, you know, one of the first, if not the first. I say we, but what I mean by that is, you know, Nesbitt Contracting, where it originated. At this point, we're, you know, far separated from that. But back then at Nesbitt Contracting, it was, you know, we had many, many mills. I would say, you know, upwards of 10 or 15 mills at that point in time. And we needed a sweeper that was going to be able to follow our, at that time, Workins, the Workin 2200s, and a couple of road techs as well. So being that we needed that high production capability, you know, we had to design an elevator system or a system in the truck that was going to carry that material efficiently and effectively. You know, so I guess designing it with certain hydraulic components, you know, say a high torque hydraulic motor that was going to carry those 14 flights and material up the floor more efficiently and effectively. So,
well, when you design for that kind of really heavy duty, beefy kind of operation, then kind of everything else is easier too.
Yeah, it really, you know, it obviously if you overshoot for it, right? So we're shooting for basically doing the heaviest sweeping application that a lot of people know of is, you know, following a mill, right? As far as what I've learned in the industry and what I know in the industry, following a mill is something that not every sweeper operator wants to do, or not every sweeping truck is capable of doing. It's a high yield application. It's it's an all guts thing. You know, if you've got a paving spread behind you as well, then it's a high stress thing as well, because you've got you know, a paver and asphalt trucks ready to lay it down behind you. And if the sweeper can't keep up or if it breaks down, then there's potentially a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of people waiting around for you to get back up and running and out on the road. So,
yeah, there are substantial penalties in some situations because they have road closures and that kind of thing. So I know when somebody's looking to follow a milling operation, boy, you just have to have something that definitely can do the job for you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that was, you know, really that goes back to the reasoning why. And there are probably more reasons why than what I can list in a row here, but, you know, that's just another one, is we needed something that was going to keep up with our, you know, our high production operation. Not only keep up, but also stay up and running and not go down due to, you know, maintenance problems or due to, broken items, so...
You mentioned that you like how your load gets leveled out in the hopper, and that's a function of the flight locale and the way that operates.
So we've got a high load point in the hopper. A couple of reasons why we do it. Obviously, number one, the hopper is capable of carrying 5 yards usable. So we rate that water level. So the way that we think is, if you're going to rate a hopper, we wanted something that was going to be the biggest, number one, so we could stay running, you know, stay sweeping behind the mill as long as you possibly could before you had to try and flag down a dump truck or an end dump or anything to dump in. So the high load point, you know, obviously keeps the material, you're able to pile the material higher into the hopper, you know, at that 5 yard level, which is based on like a water level, 5 yards usable. And then, you know, how the elevator is configured, the angle that the elevator sits at, and as well as how fast the elevator is moving, you know, obviously if it's able to, you know, carry that material off the end of the flight or the squeegee and kind of flick it towards the front of the hopper, you know, it's going to load the material more evenly, I guess, into the hopper rather than, you know, kind of sloughing it off and into the hopper and it's building up towards the elevator side, towards the back. So it reduces the amount of times that you have to, you know, kind of do the brake jab and get material to slough forward towards the front of the hopper.
Yeah, and having a balanced load really makes such a difference.
Yeah, it does.
And how does your hopper dump?
Well, so hopper dumps off the right-hand side. What we've got, and I believe at this point, it is proprietary to us in the industry. We're the only ones that do, which is a vertical lift mast system. So one of the comments that I hear the most from people, you know, when we're out at shows or we're demoing this to municipalities or contractors is, oh, it's like a forklift. And, you know, I guess, yeah, in the simplest form, yes, it is. It looks very similar to, its design is very similar to, everything there, you know, is very similar to a forklift style lift mast. It utilizes some of the same components, beams, rollers, maybe stuff like that. We overrate everything. So everything is built well beyond what its actual capability is, right? I should say we underrate. We overbuild. So, the integrity and the structure of the mast, the lift system, and the bearings and the chains and rollers and everything is rated well beyond its capacity is well beyond what it's actually rated for, if you understand what I'm saying.
I think, yeah, I do. And
it's capable
think,
of much more than what we put it up to.
Yeah.
That way. But going back to it, the vertical lift mast is, from what I've seen, we're the only ones that do it. And what we're able to do there is, you know, everywhere that the scissor lift is underneath of a standard hopper on some of the competitors' brooms, ours is just more hopper down there because it's not sitting on top of a scissor lift at all. It's just sitting on top of a, we call it a carriage, or it's almost a, you know, a pickup portion that the hopper would sit on that allows the hopper to sit basically flush down on the frame of the truck itself. So, and then the hopper raises up to 12.5 feet in the air with this lift system and dumps off the right-hand side with a 42-inch dump door. So having that extra long door also allows us to dump more towards the center of trucks. So instead of just, you know, sloughing it into the side of a high or an end dump or a side dump, anything like that, we're able to get it more towards the center of a dump truck. So helps them to level that load off as well.
Well, it sounds like that might give you a better lower center of gravity, too, onto the chassis as well. So that's another issue of stability. You know, I think that's one of the things, especially when dumping, there's the stability issues. But the ride can make a lot of difference, too, when you get to a, you know, near to your capacity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It can really put a stress on the entire unit. What else should we talk about with your machine? What are other points that you think provide you with competitive advantages?
Number one, you know, it kind of goes, again, I had said it earlier in the conversation. I'm probably referenced back to a couple of points that I made earlier in the conversation. But availability for me, you know, and I guess for our customers to contact me or another representative of our business, another person, a spokesperson for our business. We're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I say that. It's probably hard for a lot of people to believe, but it's been proven time and time again. I'm able to be contacted, you know, any time of day. Like I tell a lot of our customers, it might take me a second to find my voice at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I guarantee you that I will answer the phone. if there's anything that you need, I will be sharp enough that I can answer your questions and I can help you along and we'll keep you out on the road. That's an extreme competitive advantage of ours. And honestly, at the time that we were running a competitor's brooms or broom, that was one of the things that pushed us towards the direction of you know, designing and engineering our own, which was the service and support aspect of it has got to be huge within the company. Like any other company, whether it's the restaurant industry or a golf course, anything, you've got to provide a service and you've got to support your customers. Your customers are ultimately what's keeping the doors open and what's paying the bills and what made the product what it is. They are who made the product what it is. You've got to support that aspect of the business more than anything else. You know, I would say that it probably goes hand in hand with your employees. You know, customers and employees have to be right there, you know, next to each other as far as where they're at on your list and how you provide support and service to them. So,
Well, that's a real strong statement, and I think that's one of the advantages. Contractors I work with a lot, and they're, especially smaller guys, they'll say, well, how can I compete with the big folks? And I say, answer the phone.
Yeah.
Be available. And something else that tells me is that it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
You don't have those many breakdowns in the middle of the night that you have to deal with, and as a result, you can keep doing that. So I think that's definitely a strong point for you.
If it did, I tell you, I would probably be pretty exhausted at this point. After being in this industry and being with them for virtually since the beginning, and being around for every broom that's ever been built, I would be exhausted at this point answering my phone at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning every day. So
that's a big plus that you're able to do that. And I think that is a problem with the, they close at five,
Yeah.
Whatever time zone that is. And as a guy that's out on the West Coast, I run into that all the time with manufacturers of this, that, or the other thing is, their 5 o'clock is my 2 o'clock. So,
oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and we deal with that with our customers as well. We've got several customers. I mean, many, many customers out on the East Coast. And if they're up at 6 o'clock, it's 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock over here. And 6 o'clock in the morning is not an uncommon time for somebody to jump in. Say they've got a brand new operator that's getting in a broom Monday morning, getting in the next broom Monday morning, and is in a panic and forgot how to get the system started. I've got to be able to, he's got to be able to contact somebody and, for the three minutes that he needs to be a quick walkthrough again and get it going and get him running. So,
and hope you can go back to sleep.
Yeah. At that point, usually, I'm up and making coffee. Then.
That's usually what happens to me too. When I get those calls from the East Coast and they say, well, I waited till 8:30 to call you. That's right. I tell people on the East Coast, ideally, if it's not in a rush, if you want to reach me first thing in the morning, go to lunch, come back and call me, and it'll be first thing in the morning out here. In terms of parts, what about your standard wear parts? Are they readily available? What do you do for, when people do need replacement parts, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so that's another great advantage of ours is that, we produce everything in-house. So all the manufacturing, all the fabrication, all the, the component bending for all the steel is all done in-house. We've got, I believe at this point we've got, almost double digits in fabricators in-house that, that work full-time. We've also got a robotic welder. And he or she works full time as well, and no sick days for the robot, so that's a good one. Being able to produce all those parts in house and keep everything tight like that, we are able to stock everything as well. We control our volume, we control what we have in stock. We're not waiting on on an outside source or an outside fabricator or manufacturer or anything like that to provide us parts and waiting for stuff to come in. Another advantage that creates is that if there are any changes that we want to implement, we can do it on the fly. We can do it on the fly. So if we have ideas, if we've got, again, it goes back to the customer. If a customer calls in and says, hey, it'd be nice if, X and X went into place or we did this instead, or can I get this custom part? I'm thinking that this might work really well. Can we work together and build this component, in a trial format, and can I try it on my truck? That allows us to do it in a matter of hours instead of days or weeks or months. If we get a call that says, I can't think of anything, per se off the top of my head, but just a different style component that they think might work better, or a different angle on this piece or something, we'll go right to the drawing board, typically same day, and engineer it really quick and come up with a drawing and a concept and throw it out to the plasma table, and the plasma table will cut the material out and we'll throw it on the brake press and bend it, and we'll try it in a truck that we have here, in a broom that we've got here, and see if it fits and make sure that it's going to operate and work how we think it's going to, and then it'll go right out to the customer, typically within a day or two of initial contact. So we try to use a saying that we use a lot, a saying that I probably should have coined several years ago or trademarked, is whatever it takes. It's a saying that I've been using with my brother actually for probably 10 years now. And it's really, again, that's one of the driving factors behind what's gotten the business to where it is here as well, is we just do whatever it takes to make sure that that we can do the best that we can, and we can provide, you know, everything that we can to the customer that they need.
Those are very strong statements, and the ability to be able to jump into line is huge, too, and you can't do that when you work with outside fabricators.
Correct.
You know, you can call them and maybe get a little further in line, but when you're doing it in-house, you're able to get if a customer's down and not operational, you're able to get him back going as fast as humanly possible. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very strong. What else should we talk about? I've asked you questions, but, you know, tell me, tell our listeners what, you know, what any other points that you think are competitive advantages that you might have. I don't know, you've hit on quite a few, so there may not be any left.
Yeah. Well, there's always, you know, there's always something. It's kind of, you know, I'll just point out that, first of all, this is, you know, we had kind of started this out as being kind of impromptu, right? Like, you know, it was a phone call to actually set up a date to do the podcast.
Uh-huh.
I said, hey, let's roll with it. So I've got about three words written down on a page right now that I can bounce off of. So I'll just go off of features. So, you know, number one, work away from the front of the truck back, I guess. You know, one of the features that we have is an externally mounted hydraulic tank. Where we're at in the nation in Mesa, Arizona, it gets incredibly hot here. And that was another thing, you know, another one of the issues that we had ran into with competitors' brooms was hydraulic systems overheating or failing because they weren't necessarily made for, you know, the 115, 120 degree temperatures that we see down here, ambient temperatures. So having a hydraulic system that's you know, super efficient, you know, starting with the hydraulic tank being externally mounted, being, you know, 45 to 50 gallon capacity, you know, onto the pumps being variable displacement, triple pump stack. So there's three hydraulic pumps piggybacked back to back, PTO driven. And their variable displacement, meaning that, you know, we're not making 3,800 PSI all the time. We're making about 400 PSI standby pressure all the time, and it's just on a load sense. So, say the elevator gets loaded up with material, you know, it'll go from about 1,000 PSI, you know, dry run, you know, no material in it, to, you know, all the way up to our max is 3,200 PSI, and the elevator will demand that pump to create more volume or pressure for the necessity. And then once the load lessens, the pressure goes back down, drops to a nominal range that is more efficient. So hydraulic system, I would say, is top of the list, right next to, you know, PLC, ease of operation. Hydraulic system being super efficient in terms of heat, and in terms of you know, how it creates volume or pressure is huge for us as well. So,
and operating cooler in the times when it's not really hot, I mean, that definitely makes a difference in how hot your hydraulic system is during normal operation too. So it would definitely run cooler in other places. Now, that's not an issue if you're someplace where it's cold, is it? I don't know enough about hydraulics to know that.
Yeah. So it'll still, you know, very easily get up to the, we'll back up a little bit here. So there's different viscosities of fluid, number one. So that's the easiest way to kind of mitigate that or put a little bit of a factor in there. You know, you can run a AW68 or a 46 or a 32, you know, a lesser viscous oil or a lesser weight oil in a cooler climate or cooler temperature to kind of, you know, put that, allow it to heat up a little bit quicker when it is this efficient.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, so in places where we've got trucks like, you know, Canada, like Ontario, where I would say, you know, the average summer temperature is probably, if I had to guess, 75 degrees, something along those lines, you know, it'll still drop to 40 or 50 at night and, you know, 70 or 80 during the day, maybe 90, something like that. You just run a lighter weight oil for AW46, and that kind of gives you that, you know, that next step down to where it's a little easier for the hydraulic system to cycle it through, and it warms up a little bit quicker. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that all makes good sense.
Yeah.
What else would you like to say? And I want to break in here and just go back to before our hydraulic conversation. To me, I thought that was very impressive. We had spoken a week or so ago about doing a podcast, and I called today to see when a good time would be. But I'm talking to somebody that is familiar enough with the product that you really didn't need to go away and make a list and so forth. And I think that says something for your place in this operation as well, and the knowledge you have of your equipment.
Well, I greatly appreciate that. That means the world to me. If I can get a little bit into details on that, I've been, again, I had said this earlier, I've been with the business pretty much since the very beginning. Started actually with the Nesbitts as the janitor in the shop back, 11 years ago. Had an opportunity to get in there as at the bottom level, the base level as the janitor, and paid my dues. We'll put it that way. Empty trash cans and clean floors for a year and a half, and saw opportunity as the market actually was starting to fall, and we had the big market correction then. Saw opportunity to kind of work my way up through the business without, demanding a whole lot from the business monetarily. And luckily enough, I was, granted that opportunity. Was able to work my way up through to, several different positions within Nesbitt Contracting, foreman, superintendent, all that good stuff. And then when the brooms came around, it just piqued my interest and kind of jumped into that as the full-time fabricator. So for about the first, probably 30 brooms, I fabricated every single component for them. Really the basis of it is, kind of what you had said is, finding somebody that, like myself, that knows a lot about the product. The reasoning behind that is I've literally worked my way up from the bottom, and I have done every aspect of this job and business. I've built the components, I've installed the components, I've wired them. We build our wiring harnesses and PLCs, touchscreen PLCs, and the enclosures and everything in-house as well. So that was a job that I had to do once upon a time as well.
That makes such a difference when the people at the top know about all the different jobs. And I go back to when I started in the industry in 1987 with, Mark Schwartz was at that time vice president of the family-run Schwartz Industries. But his dad had wanted him to go to college, and he didn't want to. He wanted to come and be, a big shot in his dad's business. And so as the story goes, on his first day of work, his dad said, "Well, son, those trucks out there are dirty. Go wash them." And, made him come from the bottom up, and I think that makes such a difference in all of the qualities of the people that work there. I'm real glad that you talked about that part.
Yeah. Well, that's I attribute a lot of our success, like I said, to our customers and the guys that work with us. Our employees, the guys that are out there in the shop every day, and I'm sure. I wish I could bring them in here into the conversation, kind of impromptu as well, because I'm sure that they would kind of tell you the same thing about me. Is, the reason why they support the business so well is because we support them very well. I know, exactly what it's like to be in their shoes. In fact, I've hand trained most of these guys to do, what I did, and kind of the ways that I've, learned to do it, while still giving them freedom and responsibility to find their own way as well. Everybody's got a different way that's going to work better. So
you're not a micromanager.
No, you can't be. There's too many aspects of the business. There's too many places to micromanage in order, to be able to micromanage at all. You got to know that people are going to be responsible for their own actions. You got to hold them responsible, and you got to help them through it. You got to do your job. I've got to do my job, and make sure that they've got all the information that they can possibly get, and be there to answer their questions, and then you just let them go, and you let them succeed is the best way to put it, right?
Yeah, that is right, and it's a big advantage that the people at the top of the organization can not only talk the stick, shall we say, of the different types of jobs that there are to make the sweepers, but you also talk contractor. And so you can be the interface between those two things. That's a big advantage, I would think, also as you expand out and move the market further. What is your market? You talk about selling into Canada. You sell around the United States and Canada, or
United States and Canada right now. We've got several distribution facilities in place. Canada's actually, I think we broke into that last year. It could have been 2018, though. It's really hard to keep track of it as fast as everything's moving nowadays, when we actually broke into it, per se. But, Canada's a great market for us. I think providing people with an option, again, that's kind of why we got into it. We needed a better option, or we needed another option. It turned out to be better. Providing people with another option or a better option, it gives you a name, it gives you an avenue to take, I guess. So being able to sell up into Canada and working with our distributors up there has been great for us. The responses and reactions that we get from our product are always, it puts a smile on my face is the best way to put it every time as well, because, when somebody comes up and they're looking at it, and we're, say we're demoing or we're even just displaying at a show, and they look at the hopper, in the air, and they look at how we build the truck, and we're able to walk them around it and show them, the features and benefits of it. They always say, wow, and every time they say that, it puts a smile on my face, because I know how much, time and effort and, the whole quote-unquote blood, sweat, and tears that I've got into it. So it's really great.
Very nice. This has been just a good interview, and I'm so glad to learn more about the X-Broom product as well. Do you think we've covered it, or do you think there's more to you'd like to say? How would you like to?
I'll tell you what. If we didn't cover it, we'll have to plan for round two. How does that sound?
There we go. Give everybody the website you'd like them to go to and the phone number you'd like to call. Have them call.
Yeah, so our website is www.nescon.co. So it's just .co, and that's Nescon, N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, O as in October, N as in Nancy. And the best phone number to reach us at is our office, probably during regular business hours, and that's about 7:30 to 4:30, rather, 480-505-0001. And as well, like I said, my cell phone number, my personal cell phone is attached to our social media, which would be Instagram and Facebook and YouTube as well, which is at X-Broom by Nescon. And my cell phone number is area code 952-250-4531. So again, if there's, somebody wants to text over a question or wants to call me and chat a bit for it, about it, that's perfectly fine as well. Feel free to.
That's great, Will. Thanks so much for this. And clearly, we were talking to somebody that didn't need to have notes written on their arm in order to know what to say. So that's very credible on your part. So we've been talking to Will Conklin, and he is one of the co-owners of Nescon, which is the owner of the X-Broom sweeper. And thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ranger. I appreciate it.